And welcome to Grow Mindset Podcast. This is Craig Dillon, your host, and I've got a gentleman who's been on Grow Mindset before, and he did a nice job, so I decided to invite him back. Don Richardson. John, welcome to Grow Mindset today, my man.
Hey, Craig, thank you so much for having me back on this podcast. I really do appreciate everything that you're doing out there for your teams.
Okay, so John, for those that don't know, why don't you share your story? Let me tee you up a little bit. You know, you're a veteran. You had a very interesting, unfortunate incident happen to you that really changed your life and really gave you a purpose. It's been your mission since that happened. You're an author. You're a speaker. You've done a lot of things. You've helped a lot of people. You've traveled the world. You share your message with the world. I want you to share with Pro Mindset Podcast audience your story and your message.
Yeah, thanks, Craig, for that opportunity. This opportunity. I was a world class athlete, ran track and field for the University of Arkansas Go Pigs. John McDonald was our track and field coach. He just passed away recently. But he's the most winningest coach in NCAA history, any sport. So 42 national championships. Think about that. 42 national championships. What kind of mindset does that take? Winning one's easy. Winning 42 is not so easy.
You know, winning 42 is a lifestyle.
It's a lifestyle. It is a culture. And I got to be at the front end of him building that culture of winning. And so that set the table for a lot of other things, unbeknownst to me going through the process, but looking back on it, seeing a lot of the applications of what we learned there. So I went to two Olympic trials. I graduated in 1988, went to two Olympic trials. 1988 Olympic trials were in Indianapolis. I ran the high hurdles and I did the long jump. I enlisted in the United States Army because the Army had a world-class athlete program. They still have it. And if your national governing body of sport, the NGB, USA Track and Field in this case, says that you are a bona fide contender for the Olympic Games, the Army will become your sponsor for that training session of about 2 years. On my way to that training session, because USA Track and Field did say I was a bona fide candidate, Operation Desert Shield Desert Storm came up, and I was diverted to the Gulf War. So I spent 6 months in the sandbox, had amazing experiences over there, but my track and athletics suffered significantly. To that, I could no longer run the high hurdles. I wound up switching events from the high hurdles to the 400-meter hurdles, which is the longer race one time around the track. And shifting that mindset around there, I actually qualified in my fifth race, finished 17th for the United States Olympic trials, in the United States Olympic trials in 92. What this means is anybody, for those that are out there, a person who makes the Olympic trials in the United States has made the A standard for the Olympic Games. So if they were living in any other country around the world, and that country did not have a slot available for an Olympic class athlete, the standard that I ran, I could have run for any other country. But you have to be top three in the United States in order to be selected to the team. So I have an Olympic standard, but I have to go through a trials to actually make the team. So I finished up 17th in the 400-meter hurdles. I thought with inside of 4 years, come back, and I would be in the top three. So that was my focus. So I re-enlisted the United States Army to try to get back in that program 2 years down the road. I was on that right trajectory, but I love the military. I really enjoyed my time in service. I wanted to be a lifer in the military. So I took the officer selection battery test and had a class date that was coming up, being recommended for a class date. I had a battle buddy that I was going to go with. We're going to just do everything. Plus the bucket all the way to get to a light colonel or a colonel. And so we were doing all these things to prepare for officer candidate school. And on May 17th, 1994, as I'm training for my third Olympic trials in the 40-meter hurdles, as I'm getting ready to go to Officer Candidate School, right after those trials are going to be over with in the Olympic Games, I misstep a hurdle. I dislocate my left knee. I sever the artery behind the kneecap. And 7 days later, I'm left with a choice to either use a walker or a wheelchair for the rest of my life or undergo an amputation. Both are significant. Both are ending my career as athletics and ending my career as a military service person. So how do you shift your mindset around that? How do you keep a pro mindset mentality when that's going on and you're flat on your back now going down a downward spiral, questioning your identity? Who am I now? Am I still a husband to my wife? Is she going to stick around? How's my son going to view me? Do I still have a job in the military? Do I have the faculty to still do my job? Could I support my family when my Olympic dreams are dashed and I have no job in the army any longer? So we think about those mindsets. We often will go down this negative path and we need somebody or a situation to undergird us. And that was my wife, Alice. Alice said to me in that moment, the struggling moment, she said, "John, we're going to get through this together." When we think about our military servicemen and women who serve so valiantly, the stress levels on marriages in the military are about an 85% divorce rate because the op tempo, the operational tempo is so high and the stress is so great. And people, when they go to war, I don't care if you saw combat or not, when you come back from that high stress environment, you don't come back to the same level where you left. And so she decided we're fighting through this thing. After Operation Desert Shield, Desert Storm, no leg now. And when she said those words, she really baselined my entire existence. She undergirded me with that love. It was on a playground. Her and John Jr. were swinging on the swings. John Jr. was five years old at the time. He jumps off the swing, comes down, hits the ground running, sees mom and dad struggling, says, "Hey, mom, dad, see my big jump? See my big jump, mom, dad?" And he jumped between myself and Alice, and I realized that he had already validated me as his father, create his new normal. That's exactly what I had to do. I had to somehow do this and create this new normal lifestyle. So I started swimming for physical therapy to get my body back in shape. 27 months later, I wound up fluking up, messing up somehow, and made the Paralympic swim team. I'm out of the service. I'm working for the United States Army on the Community and Family Support Center. I make this Paralympic swim team. I see athletes running and jumping with artificial limbs. I have a leg made for running after the Paralympic Games. I learn how to run on that leg, learn how to jump on that leg. And 4 years later, I wind up going to Sydney, Australia, finishing fifth in the 100-meter dash, fifth in the 200-meter dash, and winning silver medal in the long jump in Sydney. So I found the parallel path, and that's the pro mindset. It's finding those parallel paths, that if one door is closing, you're going to find the parallel path on the other side to continue moving forward. I couldn't find Olympics. I found Paralympics. I couldn't serve in the military longer. I started working for the military, and then I built out what became known after I entered my service for track and field. I built out what became known as the Paralympic Military Sport Program. I won an award in 2007 for an emerging leader with that program. That program turned into the Department of Defense's Warrior Games, and then later on Prince Harry's Invictus Games. So we never know where our lives are going to wind up if we just are willing and have the courage to walk on the path that was designed for us as an individual, for our unique and our distinct capabilities. I don't have to look at somebody else's path. I have my own path to walk. And if I walk my path and have the courage to walk it, then other opportunities will open up, not only for me, but for those that I call myself now breathing life into the lives of other people's atmosphere so they can thrive in their environments.
Well, John, it's been a minute since we've spoken. Pro mindset is really encapsulated into a framework of three things: your story, your standards, and your stage. And so many of us have to work on our story, because you being a track athlete, I know at some point in time, you trained with a parachute. And it was resistance training, and it was meant to prepare you for the real race. And you never wore that parachute in the race.
Right.
But a lot of people bring a mental parachute to the race that holds them back. It's their past disappointments, failures, all those type of things. And then the second element is, it's how you show up. What is your standard? And the third one is, you have to define your stage. And the thing that really happened for you, is the one you just described for me, is your stage changed. You didn't change. Your mission didn't change. Your standards didn't, your standard of excellence, being a champion, striving for being the best in the world at whatever you do, and didn't change.
Mm-hmm.
What changed is, instead of being in the Olympics, you were in the Paralympics.
Right.
Instead of being in the military, you created programs and you were a leader for the military. And so I think for so many people out there, you have to remember that sometimes you have to redefine your stage, apply your talents and your passions, but it doesn't mean it's a dead end.
That's right. Yeah, when we're looking at our stage, I will sometimes say this in my keynote presentations. As we get into, and I alluded to it a little bit earlier, oxygen, atmosphere, and environment. Oxygen, atmosphere, and environment. Oxygen is needed to sustain ourselves in an atmosphere for whatever environment we find ourselves in. So if we're underwater, that's an environment. Our human body wasn't designed to live underwater. The human body also wasn't designed to live in outer space. So in order for myself to survive in those two environments, I need to adapt an atmosphere for myself to live in those environments. So I have to begin to pump nitrogen and oxygen and everything inside of a suit under the water, pressurize myself to sustain under the water and be able to breathe. Same way in outer space, I have a space suit. So what then become the elements that we need in life for the environment that we find ourselves in? Because those environments are still there. They've always existed. It's now I'm finding myself entering into that environment. It's not that the environment has changed. My circumstances have changed. They're now putting me in that environment. So I need an atmosphere to take with me to survive and thrive in that new environment. And I would say that is, the stage that we are shifting into. So it could be a military service member who's going from he or she leaving military service and going to the civilian life. It could be, so that stage has changed. It could be a professional athlete who is leaving the professional side of sport because of whatever reason, aging out or not talented enough anymore, somebody else younger coming in, they got hurt. And now they're going back to a world without the paycheck with the performance. It also could be a high school student going to college, or it could be going and joining the military service or some other type of elevation. The point is that when you move to a new stage, you have left one stage behind. And I think that it's not a hierarchical thing. I don't think we climb up the ladder of success, so to speak. I like to think of it as stepping stones, where I honor the place and the stage I was at to go to the next stage honoring that one to go to the next stage. So I'm always building upon the previous stage. Without the previous stage, I can't move forward. Too many times I hear in the ladder of success, you know, be careful of the people that you're passing on the way up, because you might have to pass them on the way down. Well, I don't want to come down. I want everybody to move forward, and I want us to move around. So I put the ladder across the pond, and now I look at it as stepping stones to get there, and we're going to help each other across. So I think it's a different leadership type model. I think it's a different, you know, mindset that we could have with this. And that moves us faster, and it gets us to understand and appreciate everyone who brings value, whatever their skill set is, into that mix of that stage shift.
John, you said two things that resonated with Pro Mindset. One of them is the idea of the spacesuit. I call it a performance bubble. And anything that serves you gets to come in. And anything that doesn't get to come in. And you set very clear boundaries between what serves you and what doesn't serve you. And as an athlete or a speaker, you know, you're running a meeting in the boardroom, it doesn't really matter what it is. It's a very sacred headspace that you create so that you bring your preparation, your practice, your purpose. You bring your identity. You bring your vision. You bring everything, all that stuff in there. You bring in your belief and confidence. But you don't bring in what happened the last time, what you were hoping to happen. You don't bring in doubts. You don't bring in fears. You don't bring in anxiety. All that stuff. And by doing that, you can find freedom and peace. And as an avid, you know this. When you can run free, you can run fast. And when you're stressed out, your muscles tighten up. You can't be everything you can be. And the second thing you said about shifting the stage, I call it plugging in your new purpose. You know, plug in your new purpose. Your purpose evolves. You know, this is, you know, after you had your leg amputated, you were John Rangers Church 2.0. You became a new version of you. And as you've gone through this journey of what you've been doing is in terms of reaching people, touching people, and speaking, you might be in John Rangers, you know, 26.0 by now.
Right?
So it's like most people are operating in the past. They have a tendency to get stuck. And it's, you know, professional athletes sometimes are in a loop where they still want to be a professional athlete and they're 40 years old. Those things are bottom. It's time to reinvent yourself, plug into a new purpose, and evolve into the new version.
Yeah, I have a framework. It's called the reckoning, the revision, and the renewal. And the reckoning, what you just stated in your model, is when we have a mindset that we want to get back what we desire to have back after some type of event has taken place in our life. I usually say trauma, traumatic event. And it doesn't have to be trauma in the sense that a leg was lost, or it's significant to whoever is listening. It's significant to whatever that you have to you believe you need to overcome. And caveat, I don't believe we overcome anything. So the headspace is, I just wish things would get back to normal. Can I just go back to the way they used to be? Can I just be in this thing? I don't want to move forward. I just want things to stay the same. And that's a mindset. And it's, I don't think it serves us very well. And all of us can be in it at any given time on any given situation that we don't want to move forward. So we have to recognize we're in that space. And then that's the first hurdle that we must get over. The second hurdle then becomes the revision. I'm casting a new vision on what might be possible. Maybe there is a parallel path on this other side. Maybe I can do something a little bit different, and I don't have to worry about what's over here any longer. But there are three things that hold us back from making a commitment. I believe that a commitment has to be made to the new vision. And before that commitment is made, there are three considerations that somebody has to go through. And they're very hard. It's the second hardest part of my model. The first is other people, and you said earlier, Craig, other people who believe for us what we can or cannot do, which is based upon what other people believe they could or cannot do if they were in our situation. And so a doctor who has clout, he or she may say, oh, you'll never run again. I just amputated your leg. It's just not going to happen. And they don't know the ends of running with a prosthetic. They don't know how to cut the leg in such a way, an amputated leg, so that it has the best opportunity to for that person to live the highest functioning life. They just know how to do an amputation procedure that they learned in medical school.
There you go, brother.
So they may not seek out a prosthetist who's got to fit the leg, fit the new apparatus for me, in my case, leg. Could be an arm for somebody else, could be, you know, whatever. So, but I, as a patient, I'm listening to the doctor because I believe that they are the authority in my life at this point, and they know best because they've done this so many times. And that might not be the case. So I have to be able to distance myself from other voices, other people. The second thing I have to distance myself is from society. Because society will dictate to us what we're to believe. So in the funny story, it's kind of comical. We think about Captain Hook. Captain Hook is an above-the-wrist amputee. He's the antagonist in the movie Peter Pan. He's scaring the Lost Boys. Well, wait a minute, I'm now an amputee. Am I now the antagonist? Am I the villain? And then if we start looking at in the threads of society, Craig, we see during Halloween, who are all the people that are designed to scare us? It's those individuals who usually have disabilities, mental or physical. And so now we're trying to have a health care conversation, a mental health conversation, and we can't do it because we blame society's woes on those who can't fend for themselves. So a gun shooting happens. We say it's mental health. We don't blame the parents. Well, now Michigan's doing a little bit like that. We don't blame the weapon being in the house. We don't blame it. We want to blame everything but what's actually causing it. So that's a very difficult conversation. Then it gets political because we don't want to deal with my personal responsibility for breathing life into others. It's very hard to go away from societal pressures. And then third, I've had some of the world's best hurdle coaches, Craig. None of them ever ran over a hurdle for me. I'm the one that has to attack the hurdles. I have to lift my leg up and attack the hurdle that's in front of me. And when I attack the revision hurdle and I commit to my new vision, and commitment means I cannot go back to the way it used to be. When the doctor takes my leg off, I don't get my leg back. That is a commitment. When you had your breakfast this morning and bacon and eggs, the hen was involved in the process. The pig was committed. Right? Mm. So that's the new. So we get over to the renewal. That is the new piece. And that is so hard because in the new, when you commit to something, it is impossible to use old systems, old thoughts, old ideas to put into this new bucket to get a different output. It's brand new. We have come through a horrific time in our past 3-4 years with the pandemic. What do people want to do right now? They don't want to even think about it. They want to distance themselves from it. And we have all these stresses on us because we are in denial from what just happened. Because I want to move, leaders want to move faster past this thing and just get back to the way it used to be. They built more revenue during this time. Lots of companies increase revenue, but what do they want to do with their workers who they send home? They want to bring them back into the office so they can balance the budget sheets and justify why they still need this building that's there. So it's very hard to think in a new structure when you have these old ideas that are there. So you have phantom pains. I have phantom pains. When the doctor took my leg off, I don't get my leg back. When you make a commitment, you don't get that commitment back. But I do have phantom pains that remind me of a time when I did have two legs. But that time is gone. But I still have pain for it. You may have pain for a loved one that's lost, that's, or that passed away. But that person, you're not talking to that person any longer. You know, not a one-on-one conversation. You may have pain to the loss of the example we just used. You're a professional athlete. Now you're back around your block in your neighborhood. And you want to be back on that football field, basketball court, baseball field, soccer field. And you no longer have access to the players in the field, on the field conversations any longer. You have phantom pains for that. Many professional athletes can't make that transition. Their pro mindset's not there, right? It's only on the field. And this is tough. This is hard. It's very difficult. But I have to now give myself space and grace to grow. For me, I had to learn how to manipulate a wheelchair to a prosthetic appointment. I then had to learn how to put on an artificial leg. I had to learn how to walk through the parallel bars. I had to learn how to use a four-bar walker to walk around the hospital. And then walker to crutches, crutches to cane, cane to free walking to running, running to jumping, jumping to a Paralympic medal. That process took 7 years of giving myself space and grace to grow. And we want it right now. Pandemic's over. Let's go. And we're freaking people out. They're highly stressed. They're burned out. They're overwhelmed. And the leadership is too. We have to give ourselves space and grace to grow. And once we've done that, now we're in a renewal. We're in a resolve. I'm resolute in who I am. I know exactly how I'm showing up. I'm standing taller because I've done the work. And that equates to my reward. And the reward is not a destination. It's like the Olympic motto, swifter, higher, stronger. It's that motto is written with an ER stem ending. I can be the swiftest today. I can be swifter tomorrow. I can jump the highest today. I can jump higher tomorrow. It's not written in the superlative of the EST. It's written with an ER stem ending, which means I can be better tomorrow than I am today. So it's a plateau for the next level of growth is what the reward is. We're going to arrive there, but now I've got the skill sets, the tool sets to move from that one stepping stone to the next.
Ron, so what you just described for me was a massive identity test. It's an identity test. It's a game we all play, but if you give your power away to someone else, you go through an identity crisis. When your circumstances are not in alignment with your dream, you go through an identity crisis. When you're in that itchy part of the test, it's when you go through a crisis and you seek comfort. You seek normal, familiar, easy. Nobody wants to jump into the forest of uncomfort. The unknown. Nobody wants to go there. But that's where the growth is. And how I processed what you said was that while we go through this identity test, growth is the answer. Change is the answer. Evolution is the answer. Like if it's a multiple choice question, it's not stay the same. It's not do what you used to do. It's not think like you used to think. It's be a new version of you. And it really steps into the game of your future self. You know, if you want to live, if you want to be, I mean, all of us have gone back to high school reunions or college reunions or military reunions, whatever it might be. And there's always that dude that didn't change. He's still got the same haircut. He still talks the same. He's still doing the same thing. And then you got somebody else who's on career number five.
Right.
Then they're searching for their real purpose. And every one of those careers is a stepping stone to their ultimate purpose. And they're enjoying the journey compared to the person that's kind of like stuck on a loop.
Yeah. I just went to my high school reunion. A couple of people right there. That's for sure. I was putting in here, I love doing this now because we have such amazing tools to us, for us. And I'm typing in what you said into ChatGPT. And so you're talking about, I was saying, you said that the answer is around growth. It's around change. I also put in there evolve, innovation, right? Because that's why I don't think that's why we don't overcome adversity, because this is all the things that we do. We grow, we evolve, we change, we innovate, we adapt to different things. And so I said, but what is, if that's the case, then what's the question? What are the questions people might be asking, right? And so I just, just kind of put it in, and, the changes, being able to acknowledge as inevitable, urging individuals to organizations to adapt proactively. So if you're out there, you got folks who are listening, what do you need to adapt around? That's the, what do you need to, in my world, I say, what do you need to amputate? We need to amputate out of your world because it's holding you back. It's extra baggage. You need other things to grow in its place. And then what do you need to amplify that you're already doing and doing even better? You need to do more of that in order to be successful, however you are defining success.
Well, John, you have a program called Amputate Fear. Why don't you share with the audience a little bit more about that? Obviously, cut it out. Let's move it on. Let's eliminate it. Let's not be paralyzed by fear.
Yes, and thanks for sharing that and bringing it up, Craig. So I have it's called these 90-day sprints, leadership sprints. And the reason I came up with it was I have a new tool that I've been using for a year, and it takes a snapshot from the audience and gives me a survey right during my presentation. And I'm a person that loves feedback. About 7,000 people now, 7,600 people have taken this survey over the past year. It's about 55-60% of my audience members have taken it. 99% saying that they learned something of value from my presentation. The presentation was valuable for them. 97% say they want to hear the presentation again. Of those, about 5,400 say they want to stay engaged. They want some other, what can we do to create a community? So this year, I developed a program called JR's 90-Day Leadership Sprints. And the first one is on resilience. And you just go through 90 days as a leader, and you look at your own personal reflection on how you can be more resilient. And resilience, in the first section, I'll just kind of explain it. It's not necessarily just the bounce back, that we bounce back over something, but it's also, can I ask for help? How resilient am I to ask for help when I need the help? When I was in that hospital, and I had lost everything, I had to learn how to ask for help because I didn't know how to do. And am I going to stay in my ego? A fear that, I'm going to be looked at as less than, viewed as less than. Those are the things that we struggle with. We don't want to have a perception of our identity be kind of taken away. So I developed these leadership sprints to help us understand that it's okay to ask for the support, so we can also empathize with our team members who we are called upon to lead, and that we can build a global community. So my speeches are all over the world. So we want a global community. I was just talking to a person in Kazakhstan, the other day, My other friend is, and he's in Uganda. Another one is in South Africa. Another person's in Korea. Another person is in Japan. So all these people gives us a global perspective of the things that we might be dealing with. How do they deal with it in London? How do they deal with it in France? How do they deal with it in Canada? How do they deal with it as we're, you know, listening to a colleague that's down there in South America right now, right in Cancun. So we want to be able to have a world view so that we can act better for the people that we serve as we breathe oxygen into their atmosphere for them to thrive in their environment.
That's awesome. Give me an example of what is the biggest thing that men today are struggling with. Leaders, men, CEOs, you know, doesn't matter if you're insurance, banking, sports, it doesn't matter.
I'm not sure if it's the biggest thing. I think it is a thing. I was just doing my last keynote to a group in government technology. And one of the challenges I see across the board is this state of denial. We're in a state of denial. We're denying that, and here's how it comes out. We're denying that the pandemic even happened, right? Not that it didn't happen, but the lessons that we're learning, we just want to be, we want to distance ourselves. We want to run to the new numbers now. And we haven't honored what the entire world went through as this huge shift. So we're asked, so we're putting a band-aid on stuff. We want to put a wellness program in. We want people to go to a happy spot and all this stuff. And people are saying, man, screw you. Because there's a disconnect with what we're asking people to do because we don't honor that there has been a huge shift that has happened. We cannot operate the same way we did before the pre-pandemic. We're not there any longer. So the micro of Uber Eats and, you know, other programs that bring food to your house, we didn't really have that before. It was that we had it as an option, but most of us went out to eat. That's why it was such a big deal when we shifted to come home to eat. How are we going to get our food? What are we going to do? So then Eats started coming to us. And now in the new, we get a chance to choose again, but most of us choose not to go to the movies. We rent them on Amazon Prime or something else, and we watch them at home. We get a big theater system. We have everybody in the house. When you sent me home, I could do a load of clothes during my Zoom calls. And I didn't have to commute to go an hour to work and an hour back. So you just saved me 2 hours. And now you're asking me, after sending me home and then saying that I was a non-essential, you told me I was not essential, and we reduced the workforce. Now you're saying, oh, please come back to work inside the office. And I'm saying, I'm not arguing whether that's right or whether that's wrong. I'm saying we have not honored what change took place to the production that we have right now. People are choosing lifestyle over working for somebody that doesn't honor and respect them. We see it happen all the time. So I think that's the biggest thing that's facing workforce and the hiring process. Not that people don't want to work. They just don't want to work for you. that's what it is. And so that's a hard thing that we have to learn. And Craig, leaders are going through it too, and they don't want to be resilient to ask for the help that they need, that they've gone through. And so that's where my company, Inspired Communications International, comes in, and we honor those things. It's not that we have the solution for it, but we set the stage and the precedence for you to have that conversation with however your values, vision, mission are for your organization. So we have a big client that's coming up on April the 8th. I won't say who it is, but they're in Portland, Oregon. And so we're meeting with the leadership team to talk about these issues as their stovepipes, or, you know, I call them stovepipes. They're silos. And in order to grow, they have to cross-pollinate with each other. They have to talk to each other. And those are the things that are tough to do. But we have some activities that we put in to make the conversation easier, then we, you know, shut up and let them talk about it in their own vernacular and then synthesize the information so they have a pathway forward.
So to kind of summarize what you said, and from their perspective, is that we haven't made a change because of COVID. And people like the change. People like working from home. People like working remotely and having the flexibility, not having to spend windshield time on the highway in the mornings and traffic jams on the way home. They could multitask. They could play with their dog in the yard. They could play with their kids. They could spend time with their loved ones. They could get household chores done. At the same time, get more work done, perhaps at home, than they got done at the office. And now the powers that be are like, hey, we got to go back to what we used to do. And people are kicking and screaming because it's like, well, I don't want to change. I don't want to go back. I want to go forward. And yeah. So that's an interesting dynamic for major corporations that have huge office buildings.
Right.
And they justify a lot of their resources and you know, line items on their expense ledger on having that, you know, 17-story building that nobody wants to work in.
Yes. I also will say that there are those people that do want to go back to the office. They want the more structure. So leaders have to look at the entire scope of it. And that's hard. My point is that's hard because leaders are struggling with the exact same things as well. And that's what makes this a unique environment. You just can't put a Band-Aid wellness program fix on this. This has to be a total cultural shift for the organization. It's not a Band-Aid fix. I was writing that down over here when you were talking. It's a total shift of the mindset. It's hard. It's not easy.
I don't have the answers, but if I was a CEO, I would have designated days that are office days. And if they not mandatory, voluntary. So if you want to come in and you want to connect with people in the company, you know, hey, we're doing that on Wednesdays.
Yeah.
Selected days of the week. And then there may be certain departments that more lean towards working together as a team rather than through Zoom, being in the same office.
Yeah.
And so, hey, if you're going to be in this area, you're going to be, you know, under a roof. But if you're not, we don't care. I mean, salespeople for years, they don't care. Just go get it done. Go make it rain. If you're out playing golf half the time.
I think the challenge is that it becomes a one-stop shop, right? So every culture is going to be different. There's some jobs you just can't phone it in, right? You know, an EMT can't phone his or her job in. Firefighter can't phone his or her job in. A police officer can't phone his or her job in. So we have to look at the job set, you know, that leader has to look at their own skills and what's their culture for the first part. And then, you know, have the conversation. I think this is the time, because we don't have all the answers, is to engage everybody in the conversation. I don't think this is necessarily a leadership type conversation. I think you have to take a pulse of your organization to see what has shifted now. What's the new, because this is total, we're in a new environment. And if we're measuring with old standards, we might not be measuring the right, you know, apples and apples any longer. It might be apples and oranges, and we get bananas of the outcome, right? So we have to, I think, my opinion, get some thinking tanks around, talk to the employees, see what they are feeling, you know, for the most part, and then build to those things that the employees are kind of saying. Because when they came in, you had a culture, right? And they knew what the culture was, so they got a chance to choose. Then with the pandemic, we created another culture. So now they shifted around. They know what that culture is like, and they're able to compare the two. And because they can compare the two, if I'm going to choose the culture that I feel most comfortable in, which could be at home or it could be at work, but you got to do the test. It's really good. I think that's where we are in society, and it's what I'm sharing out there to help, you know, help other companies to think about this differently. But yeah, at the end of the day, they have to make a decision.
Okay, John, in programming said one of the most important things with your identity and your story is to reframe your past. And it's the constant ongoing process. I'm just guessing that when you first had your lightning, how you thought of that? You might have thought of yourself as a victim. You might have saw yourself as in different lights than you do today. And when you really reframe your past, you find the lesson, you find the benefit, you find the almost like the gift. Because it changes your, it causes you to pivot. So when you look back now, I remember going to 1994, what year was it?
Yep, that was it, 94. Yeah.
Okay. So looking back to 1994, you did it at the beginning of this podcast, but how differently do you share your story in your situation today than you did maybe in 1996, a couple years out?
I'll reframe just a little bit. This is one of my growth mindset opportunities. I don't go backwards to try to reframe. What I will do is I'll go back and review of what took place. And the reason a review is good is because you may learn some nuggets right there, right? May I have done this, I could do this better, do that better. But I can't change anything about my past. That is set. It's like watching a movie for the third or fourth time. You're not changing anything about the movie.
Hey, John, may I ask something real quick?
Yeah.
Absolutely correct. You can't change it. But you can change how you view it. So I tease people all the time, you know, especially people in a very long time. It's like, hey, you know, share something fun about your honeymoon. And then ask the spouse the same question. It's a different story.
Absolutely.
So you have three stories. You have what he remembers, you have what she remembers, and then you have what really happened.
Yeah.
And it's no different than going back to your glory days in high school, college, and sports. You know, you're talking to one of your buddies, he remembers it differently than you do.
Yeah.
So what I mean by reframe is you remember it differently for your benefit.
Yeah, there's a. I'm talking to one of my colleagues this morning, actually, and we're having a conversation. And one of the things, what I'm getting at is, she remembered a past behavior, and to bring it forward for an issue she was dealing with sibling, a child she has, is she kept her mouth shut on this one and let the process work out and not jump in as mom. And that's what I'm saying. So that's a growth for her as well, because oftentimes what we do is we have a past experience. And then she said, I could also change the way I tell the story about it, is what you're saying. And that's exactly right. The way my growth mindset has worked now is, instead of asking a question like that is where I was going, is I'm going to ask it to a future self, a future state of myself. So let me kick myself down the road 20 years and then ask myself the question, what is my life like in 20 years? What would I want to have accomplished? What were some of my challenges and successes along the way? And then come backwards from 20 years to this point in my future self's past, because I can change that, right? I can say down the road at the end, in 20 years, I want to have $5 million in the bank, right? So now I can say, what will it take and how I'm going to structure my life in such a way, what do I need to do in order to have that capital in the bank 5 years down, or 10 years down the road? Now it's 5 years down the road. Now it's 3 years down the road. Now it's 2 years down the road. Now it's 1 year down the road. Now, what do I want to do in this month to hit that target? Right? So I can do something about it. Whereas I can only think about the thing I would have done in the past. I can actually do something about my current future if I forecast myself out and ask myself that exact same question 20 years from now, and then forecast me back to where I am now.
John, I think you can do both. And I think what you described about your future is absolutely a great exercise. But a lot of people are carrying around a bunch of bags, bunch of suitcases of traumas, disappointments, failures, missteps, self-sabotage, all those things. And until they reframe it, they still carry it. It's like that training parachute.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Cut it free. So unless you reframe it, so that's why I was asking about your amputation. Because if you did it, you've already done it. You've already reframed it. Because if you did it, it's been your life's purpose.
It's for sure.
Right? I mean, that's...
But I move forward from it with action. Right. So I began to look at a new vision on who I am, who I desire to be. And even though I don't have it all the way there, I can start building processes. So I'm no longer thinking about who I used to be. I'm thinking about this point of the person right now moving forward. So that's why I start swimming. So I can do something. I can swim now. I reframe it by, getting out, putting on an artificial leg, walking around the block, or going out on a bike ride, or doing something that's brand new to me, doing an action step. And I think what people have to do is yes, they have to think about, and I think it's important for us to, like, that's why I have the reckoning moment, is to come to a point of reckoning. And once I get to that point of reckoning, now I begin the process of actually doing. With people that are often depressed, or what is it? Maybe feeling not sorry. But there's the negative attitude. One of the things that psychologists say is begin volunteering. So there's an action step, is what I'm saying. That's all I'm saying. I'm not arguing together. I'm just saying.
No, I'm not arguing either. I was just
the action.
I think what I see with a lot of people is they are paralyzed from it because they're stuck in their past. And
we
reframe the past about, hey, this gave you a new opportunity, set you in a new direction. Then all of a sudden they're free too. Okay. Very few people want to sit on the couch all day. You know, there are a few people that might like doing that, but most people want to do something, make an impact, leave a legacy, make a difference. You know, help people, help themselves, and they can't because they're stuck.
They're in a rut.
And so one of the things that I've watched with athletes is when they get cut and they didn't do anything wrong. When they got cut and somebody else that made it wasn't as good as them, wasn't as athletic as them, didn't care, so didn't want it as bad as they did, at least in their minds. Well, if you get stuck on that, when you get your next opportunity, that opportunity is not going to last long. Because you only cut again. So you've got to, and so it's no different than, you know, it's going to sound like a silly example. What you have to do when you have a flat tire, you have to patch it up so you can keep going. You can't go on the right path, right? And so it's a constant thing of every time you fail, every time you have things going on, no big deal. Learn a lesson. Reframe it, set yourself free, move forward, start something else in motion. And unfortunately, people that are stuck in the past, they can't do that.
Yeah. Well, you just said it with the flat tire. They did an action. You fixed the tire.
Yeah.
You patched it up. You put a pump on it. You pumped it up. And right. Then you got back on the road and kept on going. So you have to do an action with it. And so we can think about it, but we've got to act. We have to take it from the dream, the thought world into a physical world, write it down, whatever the action is. We got to act on that impulse.
Absolutely. John, is there anything else you would like to add about what you guys are doing with your organization that might be intriguing to our audience?
Yeah, I've been thinking hard about how to, our whole mission is to, vision is to inspire worlds. Inspire worlds, not to inspire the world, the entire world, it's to inspire worlds. Our worlds are spheres of influence that we have. And so we're always talking about, you know, putting life and breathing life in others. So we launched, you said that, you know, the 90-day course, you know, folks, you know, if you want, you just get in that course. It's really a self-paced course, but I come in, I had a coaching call this morning, office hours, and we talk about these things, whatever's on people's minds, because they're all at different places inside the course. So we just, whatever's on your mind, we just talk about, do 15 minutes, 20, 30 minutes, and we do it once a month. And then we have, to help people stay in community, we launched a merchandise line. So it's JR's merch, the inspirational kind of, it's through diversity merchandise. And so this is all about the mindset of how we, you know, like you were talking about earlier, how do you put something on every day? I'm going to hurdle the adversity. So that's one of the, you get a ball cap. I got a ball cap right here. It says amputate fear, right? So you got amputate fear ball cap. You got a shirt on the back that says amputate fear, and you got a coffee mug that says amputate fear, right? So you're every day you're seeing that in front of you. The other one says hurdle adversity. The other one says breathe life. And then we took breathe life and we put it into Latin, which is vitam spirare. And then on the sleeve, you'll see you've got the logo of JR. So it's just a kind of a reminder that we're fluid. We're always breathing life into others. I'm always doing affirmations in the morning time. And these are some that you can just kind of get, have with your family, and just as a reminder of what we want to do every single day. So we're out and about right now. We're doing lots of events and really enjoying the time of just meeting people. You know, it's great always to meet you, your wife, you know, you're just great people. And so I thank you again for allowing me the opportunity. We do have a newsletter. You can sign up for the newsletter. I can't remember where to sign up, but I'll give you the show notes on it. And we do that every Friday. It's called Forward Friday. So it's in a 3-2-1 format. Three lessons I learned from the week, two people to follow, and then one action step for the following week to do. It's a really simple, easy newsletter. And then we also put in some things of what we're up to, you know, so what where I might be the next week. So other people can kind of come in. And we can have a pop-up or meet-up if that's necessary.
John, I want to thank you for being on Pro Mindset today. Put out there your website real quick.
Yep, website is johnregister.com. Thank you for that, johnregister.com. Everything that you need to book me and do the merchandise and all that stuff is right there. So we'd love to make a connection. And thank you again for the time for being on your show.
Thank you, John.
It's Craig Dillman, the host of Pro Mindset Podcast. I want to thank you for listening or watching today's show. And you can catch us every week on the normal social media platforms like YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and all the listening podcast platforms. I hope you enjoyed today's show. And more importantly, I hope you gained a Pro Mindset insight. Please be sure to rate and review Pro Mindset Podcast. And I look forward to catching up with you on our next show.